We're continuing the series that we've been studying on Sunday nights for a while now about Israel's enemy, the Philistines. And we've already studied a lot about what the Bible teaches of their origin, and then from what the patriarchs happened with them and their first contacts with the Philistines back in the book of Genesis. And then from there, what happened through the period of the judges, especially in the time of Samson and Samuel, and then leading into the reign of the first king of Israel, King Saul, that the Lord anointed. Of course, Israel had demanded to have a king like the nations, and God let them have that desire of theirs. And when he had the prophet Samuel to anoint Saul as king, and 1 Samuel 9:15-17, he said it was to save my people out of the hand of the Philistines. So that was central to what Saul was going to be doing as king of Israel. And so we've, in the last couple of lessons, we were looking at 1 Samuel 13, the situation that occurred there with the battle with the Philistines, or at least the coming battle there, that Saul responded to the fear of the people by offering a sacrifice that was not authorized by God, as he told the prophet Samuel that he forced himself to do so, making every excuse, blaming Samuel, blaming the people, everybody but himself, for the sin that he committed. But the Lord then told him he was his kingdom was not going to continue after him, but God was going to give it to a man after his own heart, who would be David, as we know. And then last time we saw David's close friend, the son of King Saul, the heir to the throne, Jonathan, and the one whose heart became knit with David's because of their mutual faith in God. A faith that Saul did not have. And Jonathan led a great victory over the Philistines in 1 Samuel chapter 14. And we were studying about that last week, which brings us now in our study to King David. And David became the arch enemy of the Philistines by their own testimony. And David was used by God to plague them. As we've seen in that history of Israel, the Philistines on many occasions were very sore oppressors of the children of Israel. Now, in keeping with what we read concerning the promises that God gave to Israel under the Old Covenant, God had promised deliverance, his deliverance over their enemies if they were keeping his commandments. But they would have they would flee before their enemies, and God raised up their enemies against them when they were disobedient to them. So if on those occasions when Israel was oppressed by the Philistines, automatically we know, based on God's promises, that meant that Israel was not serving the Lord like they should and during those times. Whereas when they were doing so, the Lord always kept his promises, as he always does, and did so for Israel when they were obeying him. Now, Jonathan believed God's promises, as will David. And we went through several scriptures in our study in Exodus, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy, where God had promised Israel that that their enemies would flee before them. And five of them would chase 100, or 100,000, and that they would, their enemies would come before them one way and flee seven ways. We saw those things mentioned and described by God what would happen if they, when they were obeying him, and told them not to be afraid of their enemies. Yet what did we see in 1 Samuel 13 when the Philistines came and gathered there at Michmash, and what happened to Saul's army? Well, they were melting away and all the people were running. They were hiding in caves and fleeing to the other side of the Jordan, going anywhere to out of their fear of the Philistines. But why did they have any reason to fear the Philistines? In which situation were they ever going to be fighting their enemies where it would be themselves against their enemies, and that was it? That was not the equation. It was not these enemies of Israel, like the Philistines, against Israel, per se. Who were they really against? It was against God. If Israel was serving God like they should, then the enemy that the Philistines and those others would be trying to overcome would be God. And what chance would they have? And of course, that was zero. And that's why God told them not to be afraid of their enemies. And we saw that Jonathan very much had his faith in God and had told his armor bearer when he went with just the armor bearer to fight a garrison of the Philistines, and they ended up slaying that garrison, which led to a victory over the army of the Philistines, and the Philistines ended up leaving the land of Israel at that time because of Jonathan's faith. Jonathan had said in 1 Samuel 14, verse 6, that he said that it may be that the Lord will work for us, for there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. And the fact that it was just two of them was not going to be a problem. Was it a problem for Gideon to only have 300 against the Midianites? No. Was it a problem for Jonathan to be on his own with his armor bearer against that garrison of the Philistines? No. Is it going to be a problem for David to face Goliath, which is what we want to study about beginning tonight, 1 Samuel chapter 17. And this is our not our first introduction to David. That was in the previous chapter in 1 Samuel 16, when David was anointed by Samuel the prophet as king of Israel. As we've seen before in prior studies, David was unique among the kings of Israel in that he did not have one, nor did he have two. How many anointings did David have? Three. He was anointed as king of Israel by God through his prophet and judge Samuel in 1 Samuel 16. And this was right after 1 Samuel 15, when Saul disobeyed the Lord again, when God told him to smite all of the Amalekites and to spare none of their people or animals. But he spared the king Agag, and he also spared the best of their flocks. He had his excuses again, of course, Saul was a first-class excuse maker. But he had his excuses again that we were going to make a sacrifice of the animals. The people insisted on doing that, and really behind that is, we'll see, the animals are going to be killed anyway in the sacrifice. But that's not what God told him to do. He told him to utterly destroy them, and he did not. And so even though he had obeyed percentage-wise most of that commandment that God gave him, how much of a commandment of God do we have to obey to be credited by God for obedience? It has to be full obedience. Partial obedience is disobedience. And that's what happened in 1 Samuel 15 with Saul. And what did God say then? Well, he had already told him when he had transgressed in 1 Samuel 13 that his kingdom wasn't going to continue with him. He was going to give it to a man after his own heart. That was going to be David. In 1 Samuel 15, though, he changed it to the point where he said, this day I've rejected you from being king. So he moved up the time frame, and it wasn't going to be in God's sight at Saul's death when he was no longer going to be recognized by the Lord as king of Israel. It was right then, that day, and that's when he sent Samuel to anoint David, which happened in chapter 16. So David was anointed king then. So in the sight of God, and that's when God put his spirit upon David and took it from Saul, and an evil spirit troubled Saul. David played the harp before Saul that gave him relief and comfort when he was troubled by that evil spirit. But what did all that signify? In God's sight, who was king of Israel beginning there in 1 Samuel 16? It was David, not Saul any longer. When he's telling the high priest, I'm on the king's business, he wasn't lying, and he wasn't being shady with the truth at all. He was the king in God's sight. Now, the people didn't recognize that yet. But did that make it untrue that God, what God had done, because the people weren't recognizing the truth of it? That didn't lessen anything about what God had done. So, of course, Judah, after Saul's death, recognized David to be king and anointed him as king. That was his second anointing. And then finally, with Abner persuading the people of the other tribes of Israel to follow David, he was finally anointed king over all the tribes of Israel. So David was anointed king three different times. But which one counted? Well, of course, it's 1 Samuel 16, what God does there. That was God's decision making him king. So in actuality, with that background, when we get to 1 Samuel 15, who's the recognized king of Israel in the sight of God on this occasion? It's really David. And so David, even though none of the people are either aware of this or recognizing this situation, what God has done with David, that's what's happened. And that's the decision God had made. But the one who's still possessing the reins of power on the throne of Israel is still Saul. But what do we see in 1 Samuel chapter 17 at the very beginning of the chapter? Well, this is going to be about David's faith in God. It's also going to be a display of Saul's lack of faith. And all of this is going to set the stage for the enmity that will occur between Saul, or it's really only on Saul's part, towards David, rooted in envy. But this is all based in what begins here in 1 Samuel 17 when David slays Goliath, the Philistine, their giant, and then leads to that great victory over the Philistines that occurs in this chapter. So who did God use to drive the wedge between Saul and David? I mean, he used the Philistines, so they're going to be a major player in that situation that's going to drag on that for many more years, finally culminating in the death of King Saul at the hands of whom? Those same Philistines. So the Philistines are going to be, we're going to be reading about them throughout this particular situation and what was going on with the transition of the throne of Israel from Saul to David. So at the beginning of 1 Samuel 17, verse 1 says, "Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shochoh, which belonged to Judah, and pitched between Shochoh and Azekah in Ephesdamim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. And he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass, and he had greaves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders, and the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine? And you, your servants to Saul, choose you a man for you and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall you be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. And when Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now there's the real problem. What we read in verse 11. Now, if we were to pursue further right now, which we're not, I mean, if we were to go and do a little more research in the scriptures and look at the background of the family background of Goliath, which is given elsewhere, he's actually descended from the Anakims, from Anak, which was the father of that race of giants that dwelt in Canaan in those days. Now, Israel had destroyed them. Chiefly, it was Caleb that went and destroyed them. Well, first with Moses when they defeated Sihon and Og, Og being one of those giants himself. And we can read about the size of the bed that he was on. He was another one of these giants. That's what made 10 of those spies, part of what made them so fearful when they spied out the land of Canaan. But Joshua and Caleb weren't bothered by that at all, because they also understood, like Jonathan later did, that the fight was not going to be themselves against those Canaanite people in the land. God had promised deliverance and that he was going to give them the land. So those people were not going to be fighting against Israel. They would be fighting against God. And what chance would they have? Zero. And Joshua and Caleb understood. They believed that. And when God said, don't be afraid of these enemies, they weren't. And later, those giants that were still around the area of Hebron, when Joshua led the Israelites across Jordan into the land of Canaan on that side, Caleb was the one that destroyed all those giants in that region around Hebron, and that was the inheritance he was given. So some of the remnant of them, they fled from that area around the Jordan on either side, and so there was a remnant of these giants that took refuge among the Philistines. And so this is many generations later. But Goliath is of that race, he's one of those descendants from Anak, and there he is, of course, being a Philistine now. But Goliath was there, a true giant. We don't have anybody around today. I mean, the giants that we would consider to be so. How tall are? And I'm not talking about, sometimes you get people that have a condition called gigantism, and that's when they have a disorder and their pituitary gland produces too much growth hormone, and they can be, you'll have a disorder. What, now that's detected early enough, it doesn't progress to the point where somebody has runaway growth hormone, where you can have somebody that could be 8 feet tall with something like that. So some of the Guinness World Record people of modern times would have that condition, but that's a medical condition where things aren't normal. That's not where we have a race of giants, but we don't have anybody on earth today like he's describing here of Goliath. As far as somebody with normal growth or development, I mean, the tallest people that really we see are somewhere 7 feet and up to a few inches above it at the most. How tall was Goliath? His height was 6 cubits and a span. Well, how much is a cubit? A cubit was the measure from a man's elbow to the tip of the finger, which most people, still today, that's going to be 18 inches. So a cubit would be a foot and a half. So what is 6 cubits? That's 9 feet. And a span, that's going to be what, six, I think 6 inches, or anyway, he was well over 9 feet tall. We don't have people like that on earth today. And of course, we're going to have all kinds of people that don't believe in the Bible that will, they'll scoff at that description and the existence of giants like this, but that's all that is scoffing. This is true, and this is the word of God, and God is describing these ones that he had made. And so there was this race of giants, and they reached statures of this, like Goliath. But here was a man over 9 feet tall, and he's down there challenging them, send somebody to fight, to have the one-on-one battle, instead of having an entire war between both armies. Let there be a one-on-one battle between Goliath and whoever the Israel chose. Whoever prevailed in that one-on-one battle is to be declared the victor. And the loser, they have to be the servants of the winner. What's the response of the Israelites to that, seeing this 9-foot-plus guy with the armor? I mean, here it's carry. It takes a man, a separate. I mean, Jonathan had an armor bearer. Goliath's got a man just to carry his shield. I mean, it's incredible how large this man was and what his weapons were like and armor and all of that. And when they saw this man and heard these words, what was their response? And who responded that way? Notice verse 11 says, when Saul and all Israel heard those words, heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. So who was it? It was Saul and all the people. Was there anybody in the army there of Israel that was gathered there that wasn't afraid of this guy? And there's no evidence that there was a single one that was not afraid of this man. Let's remind ourselves of what God said in Deuteronomy 20:1-4. When thou goest out to battle against thine enemies and seest horses and chariots and a people more than thou, how about a giant? Be not afraid of them, for the Lord thy God is with thee, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. And it shall be when you are come nigh unto the battle that the priest shall approach and speak unto the people and shall say unto them, Hear, O Israel, you approach this day into battle against your enemies. Let not your hearts faint, fear not, and do not tremble, neither be ye terrified because of them. For the Lord your God is he that goeth with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you. Joshua believed that. Caleb believed that. Jonathan believed that. As we're going to see, David believed that. But what about Saul and his army? Do they believe what God said there? They don't believe him. They don't believe what God said, and they're afraid of this man. That's the problem here. Well, David's going to come into the camp, and Saul and all these soldiers in the armies, so-called soldiers, they should have been ashamed of their lack of faith in God. So verse 12 says, Now David, this is back in 1 Samuel 17, Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons, and the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle. And the names of his 3 sons that went to the battle were Eliab the firstborn, and next unto him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. Now we were introduced to them in the previous chapter in 1 Samuel 16 when the sons of Jesse were brought before Samuel the prophet to anoint the next king of Israel. They didn't even bother to bring David, who was the youngest. They left him with the sheep, and they brought the other 7 sons. Was there any thought in any of their minds it would be that 8th, the youngest of the 8 sons of Jesse, that would that needed to be there for whatever this occasion was about? No. He was obviously regarded as the least important in the pecking order. Starting with the eldest were presented before Samuel back in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 6, it said that came to pass when they were come that he looked on Eliab and said, Surely the Lord's anointed is before him. He saw the end. Now, was that based in just because Eliab was the firstborn? That wasn't all there was to it. He looked on Eliab. It was based on his appearance, because verse 7 says, But the Lord said unto Samuel, Look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature. So what does that mean about the physical appearance of Eliab, the firstborn of Jesse? Was he a runt? He was not. He was very tall himself, and obviously he was tall and handsome. So he was right out of central casting as far as the appearance of a king. Well, Saul himself was one that was a head taller than everybody else in Israel, so they already had a king like that, and Samuel had anointed Saul. So he sees this handsome, tall firstborn of Jesse, and he says, Surely the Lord's anointed is before me. This has got to be him. And what did the Lord say? Don't look at his face. Don't look at his height. Why not? He says, because I've refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. What had God said in chapter 13? What was the quality that God was looking for in his selection and who he was going to choose to be the next king of Israel? It was not whoever was the tallest or most handsome among the young men of Israel. It was going to be a man after God's own heart. God was looking at the hearts. Now, when he looked at Eliab and when he looked at the other sons of Jesse, did he see the same heart in them that David had? Spiritually, they were not the same. We're going to see that very clearly right here. So the three eldest sons of Jesse followed Saul to the battle, and he gives the names there in 1 Samuel 17:13. And it says in verse 14, and David was the youngest, and the three eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. And it's interesting how often that number comes up for a period of time in the scriptures. How long did the rains fall in Noah's time? Of course, it was not just rain. We know there was that canopy of waters that was above the firmament, dividing the waters of the ocean from those waters above at that time. So there was all that water that came down, which would be a lot. So it was not just a routine rain, which they didn't even have at that time. Mist came up from the ground, so the way the earth was watered and the climate and everything was totally different than what we have now after the flood. But in any event, there was also the fountains of the deep broken up. So there was a lot going on that led to it being a true global flood. As far as the rains falling, how long was it? 40 days and 40 nights that happened. We saw that number there. How long were the spies, the 12 spies in the land of Canaan in the book of Numbers, in Numbers chapter 13? They were there for 40 days and 40 nights, which led into the sentence they were given for their wandering, that God gave 1 year for a day. So they were sentenced to wander a year for each of the days the spies were in Canaan. 40 days turns into 40 years. So that gave their 40-year sentence. They were in the land for 40 days. How many days was Jesus out in the wilderness after he was baptized of John in Jordan? He was there for 40 days. That's a number that comes up several times on very momentous occasions. Now we could ask the question, why does that come up so often? And the Lord consistently did that. And here's another occasion where here's Goliath. He's presenting himself 40 days. So they're hearing this going on day after day. And what are they doing all this time? Here they are all quaking in fear for 40 days hearing this Philistine defy the armies of the living God. Verse 17, Jesse said to David his son, take now for thy brethren ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their thousand, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. So he wanted them to give some food, a present of food to them, to his brothers, and also to find out how they were doing. Verse 19, now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. Well, they were prepared. They weren't actually engaged in the combat, but they were there to do so. But they were quaking in fear. Verse 20, and David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the camp and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. Now, here's what's different this time. Up until now, for 40 days, he's been saying the same thing. All the other ones have been hearing these words, but none of them have this faith in God that David does. Now David hears these words. And David is not going to hear these words and do nothing about it. Verse 24, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. So there it is again. No faith. Verse 25, and the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that has come up? Surely he doth to defy Israel as he come up, and it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? David is greatly disturbed by those words, and he's ready to take action right now. Because God had told them to smite these enemies. This was a commandment of God that was backed by God's promise of deliverance. And David believed God, and he was going to obey God. So in verse 27, the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, the eldest brother, heard when he spake to the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, why camest thou down hither, and with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. You almost have to have brothers to really understand this one. But, I mean, those were some hurtful words that his brother, and it was a railing accusation. Eliab, was there any embarrassment here that his younger brother comes in here and hears the same words he's been listening to for 40 days when he's doing nothing? And David's like, what happens to the man who kills him? He's obviously got in his mind, I'm gonna kill this guy this day. So then he rails these accusations that are utterly false against David. David wasn't coming there just to hope to see a battle. He was going to be leading it. In verse 29, David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? And there's the key question. Is there not a cause? Wasn't there? There was evermore a cause. They had an enemy opposing them that God had commanded them to destroy and commanded them not to be afraid of and promised to give them victory over if they would obey him. And they're doing nothing but having fear. So in verse 30, he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner. So we know what happened after that. The words were carried to Saul, who sent for David. And in verse 32, David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. What is Saul thinking? Saul is thinking this is going to be David versus Goliath. But that's really not what it is it? And David doesn't think of it that way at all. In David's mind, this is Goliath versus whom? Goliath versus God. So Saul has no understanding of this. He's not thinking, is God in the equation in Saul's mind and in his understanding? No, he's not. That's why he's been afraid and all the people with him. They're not considering God and believing God. And so David said to Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock, and I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. David understands and believes. And so Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with thee. And then he gave him his armor. And David put it on, but he said, I cannot go with these in verse 39, for I've not proved them. And David put them off him. Verse 40, he took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had even in a scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou camest to me with staves? What was the last thing he would have been expecting? For 40 days, nobody's dared to come down to face him. And now when somebody finally comes down, here comes this young kid, really. I mean, he's a young man, but he's not anybody that would be old. He wasn't even considered old enough to be in the army. So he's still very young, and he comes down there, not in any kind of soldier's armor, but has his shepherd's staff in this bag. That's it. And Goliath, when he sees that, I mean, he's obviously surprised, and so he disdains him. And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Verse 44, and the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. So here's this young man standing before this guy over 9 feet tall with this armor and all of that, who's telling him how, this experienced warrior, and telling him how he's going to kill him. David doesn't care. He doesn't care about that at all, because he's fully trusting in God. Verse 45, then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thou into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistine this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So he said he wanted, David wanted all of his fellow Israelites and all the world to know. And who even today in our time, as little as ever known about, I mean, as far as a time that we live in with basic knowledge, Bible knowledge, how many people know anything that's in the Bible anymore? Very little. But who has not heard of David and Goliath? I mean, that is still widely known by everybody, even though they've likely never actually read it, and they probably couldn't find it in the Bible if their life depended on it. But yet, it's something that God has made well known throughout all the ages. And anybody that even thinks about that for a moment has an opportunity to consider it was God that did this. And David knew that God was going to be the one and told Goliath that, being among the last words, of course, that Goliath gets to hear before he is slain. Verse 48, came to pass when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine, and David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slang it, and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. That was shot number one. Now, how many stones did he have? 5. I mean, did David know that God was going to give him this this victory on one shot? He didn't know that. He fully believed that God was going to keep his promise, and so he didn't know whether it was going to take 1 or 5, so he put in 5, but it didn't take 5, did it? It took 1. So he puts his stone in there and hits him right into the forehead, and this was a knockout blow. So he's knocked him unconscious with the stone there. So in verse 50, it says, so David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of it, now did they say, okay, you beat our champion, so we will now be your servants. Wasn't that the what Goliath had offered? wasn't that the way they were supposed to do? Now their champion's dead. They're supposed to give up and surrender and become the servants of Israel, aren't they? Well, they're not doing that. They're running. It says the host of the men of Israel in verse 53 and of Judah rose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until thou come to the valley into the gates of Ekron, and the wound, and that's in the land, Philistines' own land. They chased them all the way out of the land of Israel back to their own land. And it says the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way to Sherem, even unto Gath and unto Ekron. And the children of Israel returned from chasing after the Philistines, and they spoiled their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. And when Saul saw David go forth against the Philistine, he said unto Abner, the captain of the host, Abner, whose son is this youth? And Abner said, as thy soul liveth, O king, I cannot tell. And the king said, inquire now whose son the stripling is. And as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, whose son art thou, thou young man? And David answered, I am the son of thy servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite. And the women are going to be singing the songs praising what David had done, and then Saul is going to become very envious and become David's enemy in the aftermath of this in the next chapter. But we'll have to continue that, Lord willing, next time. We're going to extend the Lord's invitation now for anyone that's here, and if you have the need to repent and be baptized in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of your sins tonight, we're encouraging you to do that. If you're a member of the Lord's body, if you need to repent of sin or need the prayers of the church this evening, you have the opportunity also to come. So anyone that is subject to the Lord's invitation tonight, please won't you come while we stand together and sing.